If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions. This episode is brought to you by our Patreon supporters. Become a patron today at patreon.com/intotheportal.
Hello, and welcome back into the portal. I'm Amber Ray.
And I'm Andrew McKay.
And we're back, continuing our classics on the Film Friday Halloween Horror Fest extravaganza.
I wasn't sure how far you were going to take it with that, like what you were going to give the title of this. Definitely a classics-themed like series of movies we've been looking at here.
Yeah.
And this one, we kind of just like, we didn't really plan on doing this one. It just kind of happened.
And mostly thanks to Chris Rustick over at Obscure Anomalies.
Absolutely.
He wrote this amazing article and we've posted it to Strange Times. So make sure you go check it out at straightupstrange.com. And it's all these just awesome classic Halloween movies that aren't scary.
Right.
So anyone can watch them. They're family films.
Yeah.
So if you have a significant other or some minors in your household, like these are all really fun films that you can all get in the mood for the Halloween spirit.
Not everybody loves the classic horror movies, right?
Not like, everyone.
I mean, and even last week's Film Friday with Carrie, it's like, it's a throwback. It's more of a thriller. It's not necessarily like gory horror or anything like that, but it's still different than Beetlejuice. Like this is just a fun one.
It's
just
really fun.
One, right.
And the whole list is fun ones too. So make sure you go check that out.
Definitely.
So we're talking about Beetlejuice. It's a 1988 classic, a Tim Burton directed film.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love this one. Before we dive into it, there's a few things we wanted to mention to you all because we actually... some amazing members in our network, Straight Up Strange, are putting on a convention called SpellCon.
Yeah.
And it's going to be amazing. And it's happening this Saturday.
A convention for all things witchcraft and occult. There's a lot of like, not only just like really cool vendors and stuff, but there's like classes and things you can take for like learning how to make your own like creepy skull and all kinds of like cool artistic things like that. But yeah, they're a really awesome show in our podcast network. Definitely check them out. And if you're in the area,
Smithtown, New York,
you got to check out SpellCon. You can pick up tickets in advance, but you can also get them at the door.
Space is limited, though. It's a bar.
It is indeed.
It's a haunted bar.
Mm-hmm. This is the coolest thing about it. So yeah, there's all that information and more on their website. You can get to them through us, straightupstrange.com, and through all the socials, like on Facebook and anything like that. So make sure you guys check them out and check out us, Straight Up Strange.
Yeah, and while you're on the website, make sure you, well, you don't have to be on the website, but if you're on social media at all, and you happen to have carved a pumpkin already, might as well snap a photo and enter our contest, because you could win some amazing things.
Yeah.
We put up a poll for the best Halloween candy you can't get in the States, and apparently they don't do Kinder Surprise with the toys in them down there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
They've gone back to, I don't know, some weird regulation they have down there. Huh. So we have plenty of that up in Canada. Okay. So I went and picked up a few limited edition Halloween Kinder Surprises to add to the prize. So all you have to do is carve a pumpkin. And that's if you go on Straight Up Strange or just Strange Pods on Instagram, you'll see the caliber of artistry we are looking for.
Indeed.
There is no rhyme or reason. We just want you to post something and then you'll be entered into the draw.
Yeah, like last year we did this for Into the Portal and it got really creative. People had some really unique ones. So yeah, you just have to like follow us at Strange Podcast on Instagram. If you don't have Instagram, follow us on Twitter or Facebook as well. Tag us on there with your pumpkin and yeah, you'll get entered. Retro comics, candy, stickers, magnets, bookmarks, all kinds of cool stuff.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah. All right, you want to jump into Beetlejuice 1988?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the cast a little bit.
Okay. Well, it's pretty classic, right? As soon as you turn this movie on, you're like, oh, that guy. Oh, that woman. Oh, yeah. All of you guys.
A lot of my faves, man.
Like, obviously, Michael Keaton is the star, even though he's in limited minutes of this movie, which we'll get into in a while.
Right, yeah.
But Alec Baldwin, of course, plays Adam. And then we have Gina Davis playing Barbara. And Jeffrey Jones, who we all know as the principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, plays the father, Charles. And then we have Catherine O'Hara, a classic from Home Alone.
Yeah.
And many others, obviously.
SNL, obviously, and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. But it was so funny because as soon as I saw her face, I was like, what? Mom from Home Alone.
Right.
She plays Delia, which is she's one of my favorite characters, actually. Oh, she starts off as the most obnoxious, but she's actually hilarious.
She's so funny.
And of course, one of my idols, Winona Ryder.
A very, very young Winona Ryder.
Playing Lydia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Who ended up taking the role over a laundry list of other just well-known actresses that either turned the role down or Tim Burton just straight up couldn't see them in the part. Like there was names like Sarah Jessica Parker, a few others that you recognized right off the bat. I don't have the list right now.
Jennifer Connelly. She would have been okay.
She would have been fine. But obviously Winona, good pick.
Yeah.
Good pick. And they did the bangs just right for this role with like
that. I love it.
Her bangs look like they're like prison bars on like a gothic like cathedral dungeon or something. And they're like all perfectly like spaced with these like points or something like that.
It's very cool. I already have my Halloween costume planned as Linda from Bob's Belchers, but
Bob's
I feel like
Belchers.
Bob's Belchers or Bob's Burger, sorry.
Linda Belcher.
Linda Belcher. Indeed. Sorry, I'm kind of out of it right now. But no, I think next year I'm going to have to go as Lydia. That'd be really cool.
That'd be a good one for you, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's, brief synopsis, obviously, because we expect that you guys have all checked this movie out. You've had a hot second to check it out, 1988.
If you haven't, it's been out, since 1988. Yeah,
I mean, it's
what was that
like
one? We had someone comment on the Carrie last week.
Oh, yeah, someone commented to me. I can't remember where it was. I think it might have been on Twitter. And they were like, how about a heads up for some spoilers? And I just, like, I didn't even know whether to, like, I thought it was a joke at first. I don't think it ended up being a joke.
Oh, I thought it was a joke.
I don't even know. It was hard to tell, right? It's hard to tell with text. But anyway, like, that movie came out in 1976. So I guess
we got to add that onto our description.
I mean, we did in the early Film Fridays. True. Right? So I guess people joining us who haven't been listening to our Film Fridays, it's okay, we apologize if we dropped some bombs on you and there was like total spoilers in some of these most recent ones, but watch Beetlejuice. And like, if you haven't watched this one, then I mean, what are you doing? It is such a classic. And to me, it's not even necessarily a Halloween movie per se. Hmm. It does really well at Halloween, but this is technically one of those like year round movies for me.
Oh yeah.
It almost falls into the camp of like Nightmare Before Christmas. Is it a Halloween movie? Is it a Christmas movie? Is it a year round movie? Because it can't be either one of those two holidays.
Or what about something like Casper? Like, sure. That's another example of, like, just, like, a haunting movie. It's not set around a holiday, per se, or Halloween. Right. But it is what it is. And that's what we're getting into today, because essentially what we're getting into, the synopsis, like, you know, all of y'all have seen this before. Essentially what we get here is this lovely couple, Adam and Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And very unfortunate circumstances involving a small dog and a bridge. And they end up dying in just the prime of their life. Basically, as soon as they get their house together, right? Like, they've remodeled this beautiful house. It's a white house with a nice spire up on a hilltop overlooking this pastoral town. And it's just this awesome little setting.
Well, and it's their honeymoon.
Exactly.
They stayed home.
So they're just starting their lives. No, they're not their honeymoon. It's their vacation.
Or vacation, rather. Like, they're just,
But they are definitely like, you know, the kind of like lovey-dovey, like honeymooner types, you know what I mean? Like they're canoodling in bed and all that stuff when we see them first. And they're just adorable. I love the casting for this. Like Alec Baldwin, that was hilarious.
It's just a weird seeing such a young Alec Baldwin sometimes, right? He looks so much like his brother when he's that, like when you see him that young.
He does.
I can't remember the name of the other Baldwin, the guy from the hockey movie.
Oh, man. There's so many Baldwins. There's like three of them, isn't there?
There's a few. Yeah. I can't even remember which one I'm thinking of. The guy, the one that's has a like a cameo in Half-Baked, where he's like the MacGyver and he can make a bong out of anything. He's like working in the shop and he can like make it out of like literally anything. He's like, all right, give me a screwdriver, two paper clips and like a gold.
That's him?
Yeah.
That's, are you serious?
Yes. That's Alec Baldwin's brother.
No way.
I can't remember which one it is, but yeah.
That's not the one I'm thinking of.
Anyway.
It's like too many Baldwins in the room.
Cover How High, or not How High. Well, How High, that's another great movie too. That's not the one I just referenced.
But. How High.
We got a Red Man, baby.
We got a movie binge going last night. Kind of, Scary Movie. When was the last time?
Like, the first one too, like the year 2000 with the Wayans brothers.
Ridiculous.
So funny.
Ridiculous. Priceless. Anyways, we're getting away from ourselves.
We are way off track.
Alec Baldwin.
This all stemmed from Alec Baldwin. Yeah, okay.
But I have to say, Geena Davis did a marvelous job. She's gorgeous, and she wears that adorable dress the whole movie. I just want to be her for Halloween, actually. I just want to be her forever. I don't know.
She just has this, like, no, not at all. She's beautiful, and she just has this constantly, like, hilarious, perplexed look on her face throughout the entire film.
I love it. They're just so innocent and so cute and adorable. And anyway, so that's kind of their main downfall, essentially, because they become ghosts, and they don't even quite realize it until they have various things happen to them, which is one of my favorite parts of the movie is when Adam falls, like he tries to leave the house,
right?
And he ends up falling into this crazy abyss of sand, and it looks like the Mongolian desert, but even like on acid kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then he's like in this wasteland, and then all of a sudden he's yanked back out, and she's been gone for 2 hours. You remember that?
Right.
It's so weird. It's like a time slip. He's been in there for like 10 seconds and then he comes back, which is kind of cool. But where was I getting with this? Like, I just love that scene.
Yeah, no.
And then right. The signs of them being dead.
Right.
So there's that, pretty weird. Mm-hmm. There's the mirror. They can't see themselves. They're like vampires.
Yeah.
But they can still lift objects.
That the mirror thing was, yeah, they're like vampires. I guess it still makes sense. But yeah, they still had the ability to like interact with objects in the real world. And that's so funny. It's actually perfect. We're covering this as a Film Friday leading into next week's, or this week's rather, regular release, because we're talking about poltergeists. And so the question that came up a lot in researching for that episode is like, there's weird sort of blurring of the lines between like the actual like ideas of like what is a haunting, a poltergeist, you know, there are some very specific distinctions if you look at the definitions, but when it comes to actual context and events, it can be a little bit murky in terms of what you're dealing with. So it's like, in your mind, what are Adam and Barbara? They're clearly attached to the house.
They're ghosts.
Right? They're ghosts. They can't, but it's like, it's the house is what's important to them. Like, that's the theme of this, right? It's like a classic haunting. It's a deceased couple. They don't want to leave their home. They want to scare the new people out of their home. It would be a very typical, like, horror movie, but of course it's done in a very comedic way. But they're attached to the physical object that is the house.
And they can't seem to leave, right? Like, that's the other thing. It's not like even, like, it's voluntary by any means. It's just something that is.
And that's my question to you, because it's like, we talked about poltergeists being like in the movie Poltergeist, that lady makes the statement that the poltergeists are attached to people, right?
Mm-hmm. Poltergeists are attached to people. Yeah, I know. And they're very much attached to the place. So I wouldn't really define this as a poltergeist if you're going to go on that phraseology.
No, but I just wanted to bring it up too, because when you look at multiple definitions of even the character of Beetlejuice, he's referred to as a poltergeist. He refers to himself as a ghost. I'm the ghostest with the mostest, or whatever he says, right? I'm the ghost with the most, babe, or like whatever he has to say.
And that's where I think there is a difference where he needs to attach himself to something physical. Like he attaches himself to Lydia, but we'll get to that in a second.
Sure,
here.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, we are. So essentially what we get here is, like you've already said, this couple trying to scare out the next family, and they go through various, like, stages of realization, and they have this book, this this guide to the recently deceased, and he kind of reads a few lines from it, and he talks about how they end up drawing this door and getting to this weird waiting room, and it seems to be this place where people have died very brutally or suddenly, not in like a natural way. And for me, that kind of speaks to their condition, right? Because they didn't even realize they're dead. They didn't realize that the accident killed them.
Right.
So they're very much in a state of denial, which maybe speaks to why they're attached to this place too, to a certain extent, right?
That actually makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like some sort of a weird, like, mental purgatory, because you just haven't really realized what's happened to you. And there's multiple other characters that like say that same thing in this like mm-hmm. waiting room or whatever. It's like the football team being like, "Coach, I don't think we're actually dead." And it's just like, "I'm not your coach."
And
we're like,
and the weirdest part about all of that is when they actually end up getting through the waiting room and going to meet their agent or their, you know, their sponsor or whatever she's called. Mm-hmm. And all she caseworker. Yeah. And all she has to tell them is but tells them that they have to scare out this family. She doesn't offer them any solutions. She doesn't offer them anything.
What a caseworker, eh?
What a strange circumstance. So essentially, there's no way out for them.
Right.
How are they? They're going to be there forever, which is how this movie ends, right? They never end up getting away.
No.
They're there forever, right, living in harmony with this new family. But we'll get to that too. Yeah. We always end up doing that. Yeah. But it's just strange, right? To think that if something like that happened to you, say this is a real hypothetical situation here, that's bizarre. There's no means. There's no social services for the dead. Like, that's it.
Well, they printed a handbook and they just went that far. The caseworkers don't seem to work that hard.
That's very true.
You mentioned time slips and that sort of thing at the beginning, though. That was another moment in the movie with the time slip. There was that funny comment where they're like, "How long were we in that waiting room?" And then their caseworker's like, "I've been waiting here for 30 months. I almost left."
30? Like, I thought she said 3.
Oh, okay. I thought she said 30 months.
I think it was 3 months. 30 months, that's a long time. Well, yeah. How many years is that?
But they're dead. They got all the time in the world.
No, but when they go back to the house, it's obviously been remodeled to a certain extent. So 3 months makes more sense as opposed to 30 months. Yeah. Let's be logical about this. But anyways, yeah. So this is one of my favorite scenes too, right? So we're getting into the whole idea where they're trying to cope with this new situation. Mm-hmm. And these people are awful. This family of three, they're okay, I guess, but they come across very exaggerated, I guess you could say. They're caricatures. It's the classic father that's trying to get away from all his problems, and then you got the mom that's actually the stepmom that's just trying to, she just seemingly is just frivolous with all their money and wants to have a quote-unquote career, big air quotes happening here, with
sculptor.
With her art and all this jazz. And then you have the very cynical, like, darkened daughter that's like, almost reminds me of me when I was 13, to be honest.
Yeah, the way you describe yourself, I mean, I didn't know you as a 13-year-old. I've seen photos and it looked similar.
Yeah, very dark. Mm. But anyways, yeah, so they're very dysfunctional as a family unit. And they come into this house all chaotically. And then, of course, they're making all these changes. The house itself is one of my favorite, because obviously it starts off as this very pastoral, farm-like, whatever. And then you get Catherine O'Hara's character, Delia, who's just ruthless. And by the end of it, by the time they sit down to that dinner, right, when everyone comes over for their big whatever, and they're supposed to be a big happy family and la la, and it's all the business partners and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's been completely remodeled from head to toe. It's like, it's you can't even recognize it as the same house.
Right.
And there's that paint. It's like, it looks like that blue reflective paint you'd put on, like, I don't even know, like a souped up 80s, like, muscle car or something. And it's all over their house everywhere.
It was a strange look. I mean, look, this is the 80s.
Huh? It was.
And
had to match the sculptures, I guess.
I suppose. And one of the sculptures literally looks like one of the, like, the baby aliens from Alien.
Oh, yeah, it totally does.
It's like this monstrosity of a thing that ends up, of course, coming to life at the end of the
thanks
film.
Thanks to Beetlejuice.
because it just, you knew that was coming. As soon as you saw that, like, if you hadn't seen this movie, if you're watching it for the first time, like, you knew that chair was going to come back into play at some point in time.
Yeah.
For sure. So, but basically, let's try to get a little bit closer to where we have Beetlejuice come in, because the hilarious thing is, like, you mentioned it earlier, like, he's hardly even in his own movie. But basically, Adam and Barbara are having a tough time. They're not really doing so good scaring anyone out, because they have this epic scene at the dinner table, right? Mm-hmm. They go, they talk to their caseworker. They realize, okay, we got to scare some people. We got to do it on our own. Nobody's going to help us. And they do what look it was pretty effective in my mind, like especially with the hand coming out of the bowl at the end of the dance.
Yeah.
So they have this iconic scene where they're all possessed, or at least to some extent their bodies, right? And they're... Mm-hmm. The stepmom ends up being the voice that starts singing Deo, right? Mm-hmm. Daylight coming and we won't go home or whatever it's like, right? Which they actually ended up playing at the funeral of, we didn't actually list the name at the beginning. He was one of the lesser characters, but the chubby guy.
Oh, yeah.
They played it at his actual funeral.
Really?
Later on in the... In kind of a, an homage to that scene. Of course, they're all dancing around the dinner table and it's just like, it's not an ominous or like a malevolent feeling or anything until the end when the shrimps in their weird, gigantic, like shrimp cocktail cups reach out of the glass, grab their faces and pull them down into the glass. Of course, Barbara and Adam are obviously elated at their success and they go upstairs, but nothing happens. And it just ends up being the classic like capitalist trope of like, even though this most like what should be mortifying experience just happened to you, you're already like 30 seconds after going to try to figure out how to make money off of it.
Very classic. Yeah. I love that scene where they're up in the attic. They run up and they're like, any second now, any second, they're going to be running out of this house and booking in those cars, screaming and yelling, and then nothing happens. And then it turns out, obviously, that the father's boss, he has a wife that's really into the paranormal. So for him, he's thinking, ooh, this could be a little bit of a... You know, a little bit of a pay raise here, something like that. And of course, he already has minds to buy the entire town, too. That's another subplot there.
Yes.
And he's already, in his mind, this is his perfect little Eden type situation. And he wants to make as much money off it as possible, which to me is kind of, it's kind of counterintuitive. It's like you're going to destroy the very thing that you love, essentially. But sure, man, go for it. But in the end, that never really happens, right? They end up finding peace. But before we get to all that, what was some of your favorite moments? Like, we're getting into kind of like the middle slash ending kind of area here.
Well, okay. Well, let's go through a couple of these. Like, I wanted to mention a few of these kind of like weird, like lesser known sort of curiosities about the film. Like as we there. Did you want me to save that for the end?
No, go for it.
Okay, because there was definitely some strange things that I kind of like read about when we were looking at this film. And like early drafts of the movie were actually much more of a horror film. Like the original screenwriter made it really dark. It was going to be like basically Beetlejuice was imagined as a winged demon. His human form was taken allegedly, like in this one article, as a Middle Eastern man. The Dietzes were more about the idea of, rather than being about like mischief and marriage, it was more about like murder and like darker themes that you would normally find in like a haunted house, basically.
Mm-hmm. So true demonic spirit more than a poltergeist.
More so than, like the way, because Beetlejuice, okay, finally I get to use the word whimsical, I guess, because it's literally written in here and you have to give it to me on this one. Beetlejuice is a whimsical movie. Would you agree?
Sure.
You have to give it to me here. It's literally written right into this review. But yeah, no, I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting.
Where?
Because I don't think it would have.
I don't see it.
Well, I'm looking. I don't have it. You want to email it to me, but you don't believe me?
Well, I'm not looking at it.
Amber doesn't even, I'm pretty sure she doesn't even recognize the word whimsical as a word in the English language. Let's just go with that. That's not a word that can be applied to essentially anything.
How about let's do fun facts here. Everyone go back and re-listen to all our episodes and hear just how many times I use the word whimsical, because I do. And I use it all the time in the English language. And that's just a strange thing that you've just zeroed in on there.
Well, I'm zeroing in on it again because it is definitely a whimsical movie playing off of themes that would typically be dark. But here you have like, you know, at the very end is one of my favorites where he gets his head shrunken by the witch doctor sitting on the couch. Another fun fact about the movie that I wanted to throw out there, Sammy Davis Jr., member of the Rat Pack. For those of you who are fans of the Crooner Corner and things like that, he was apparently Tim Burton's first choice to play Beetlejuice, which would have been kind of strange.
Was there a reason why?
Well, I don't know. Like, he obviously wasn't a good actor. He played in a lot of different movies and stuff. Like, the Rat Pack had their films. He was 63 at the time, though, when Beetlejuice was made. So Yikes. He would have been, like, he could have done it. It would have been interesting to see the little mustachioed Sammy Davis Jr. in there as a Beetlejuice. He could have done a good job, I think.
He probably would have classed it up a little bit more.
I wonder, right? Well, is that really what you're looking for from the character of Beetlejuice, though? I mean, it would have been a different type of... underbelly of whatever, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It would have been interesting. But yeah, of course, they ended up casting Michael Keaton because of the upcoming Batman films. They knew he was a star on the rise.
He definitely was. Yeah, he was a sellable actor, and he did a really good job with this role. And one of my favorite moments is when they end up digging up his body and the coffin, and that's the weird part about this, is the idea of threes, right? Saying his name three times, you get transported to the graveyard. It wasn't as if he magically is summoned like a genie or anything like that, but I loved the way they put together the set for that scene.
Oh, yeah,
where they definitely end up in the model neighborhood in the graveyard, and they're digging up literally, like, it's so funny. They've got like a bunch of cardboard and a bunch of like foam and stuff from like all the different like layers of this model, and as they're shoveling down to his tomb, and then they end up awakening the beast, and they don't get what they're expecting, which is so good. He's so crude, so raw, and he throws out the only F word in the whole movie.
Yep.
Because they abandon him, essentially. And that's kind of interesting, too, because not as if you just say his name three times. It's also other words, like, didn't she say...
Home. Home, home, home.
Home, home, home. Did she... okay, so she didn't say goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. She said home, home, home. Home, yeah, home, okay. Home, and it took I knew home. There was another three words. I couldn't quite...
There was another thing, too, I read in one article where it was, like, knocking on the door, like the original entrance.
Oh,
was
knock three times.
Right? Mm-hmm. So there was a few repetitions of the... yeah, three, which is... I mean...
the Holy Trinity. No, I'm just kidding.
That's exactly what it is. But no, obviously it's, you can find that symbology in a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. I think it was just sort of an easy thing. It's like, it just works for the movie, right? Like, you'd find it something very similar in a later 90s release film, Candyman, where you have to say it five times instead of three times, right?
It also definitely reminded me of Rumpelstiltskin, that old, like, fairy tale where you have to say his name.
You mentioned that to me while we were sitting on the couch, and I was just like,
damn. The character of Beetlejuice parallels Rumpelstiltskin in so many ways, as far as his, like, jester-like, animated, sort of exaggerated presence
and
crudeness, right?
He's the playful, appealing, and amusing version of Rumpelstiltskin.
Kind of.
Right? Because he's a little more...
But in the end, he does want to rob the cradle. He wants a child bride. What does that say?
Well, he's a ghost.
That's the weird part about him, too, is that he needs to be married in order to gain access and cause chaos in the mortal world. As if he's been banned, you know what I mean?
But that's not entirely true, because he was causing chaos with the family. That's the mortal world.
Because they invited him. They invited him, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It wasn't if he's just free to do whatever he wants, which is his ultimate end game, obviously, because in the very beginning, right, with the newspaper scene, you don't see him, but you see someone sitting in a chair reading this very paranormal looking newspaper about the sandworms, attacks on the rise, 13% increase this year alone.
Death
and
worms,
then he flips over to the obituaries and picks out those two, and they're like, they look young and stupid or something like that. Right. Very easy to manipulate and get what he wants.
Beetlejuice. Yeah, and he has that commercial they end up seeing, right? Like the cowboy ad.
Yeah, that was so funny. Just classic cheesy. Like, I love Tim Burton's style with all of it. Like, he really inserts that, you know, that classic Burton-esque cinematic extra. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think, like, that's the reason why the movie ended up the way it did, not as dark as the original screenplay wanted it to be. Because Tim Burton's mind doesn't go that far, like, into the darkness, like, all the time. Like, he's much more
refrained.
Yeah. Well, he wants to play on those themes, but, like, show them in a different way, right? Like, it's taking something that would typically be dark and changing it so it's a little bit more playful.
It's something that his kids could watch or something, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Dare I say, it might be a little bit whimsical.
Another one of his ones, I really wanted to say, I would love to cover Frankenweenie on the show too.
Oh God, yeah. Totally.
We have another one in store for next week though, so I don't know. We'll have to save for next year maybe. I love that one though.
Yeah, no, that would be a super fun movie to do, Frank and Weenie. There's a bunch of Tim Burton ones. Just to clear things up, too, with the earlier statement you made, just like Beetlejuice hardly appears in his own movie, mm-hmm. which is kind of crazy. Like, you hardly ever see him. He's the star. It's only 17 and a half minutes of the entire 92-minute film actually have Michael Keaton.
Really? That's weird, man. That's so strange.
The movie is called Beetlejuice. He's on the cover. He's probably got the biggest paycheck out of anyone on that cast. He only had 17 and a half minutes in the film.
But he's only worth, what, like $15 million now?
Yeah, but you can't trust anything on, you know, read online. So we were Googling it. We were like, what is Michael Keaton worth these days? He's got to be worth more than $15 million.
I don't know.
Like, after that, unless he's just could have been a lot of blow. I mean, it could be a real Nick Cage situation. That guy's probably worth like $8 and two Dairy Queen coupons right now, shooting movies in freaking back alleys of nowhere.
He's trading Canadian Tire money.
God, he'd be lucky to have Canadian Tire money on him. I don't even know what that guy's paying his bills with.
Oh, I don't even want to know. I don't want to know, and I don't care. I thought it was really fun. You pulled up some interesting things on the actual word itself, Beetlejuice. Like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, kind of weird. Because I saw the different spelling on the sign when they first kind of like, they haul him up from the grave, right? And there's that sign pointing down where it's like, yeah. Here lies Beetlejuice. And then, yeah, it's like this classic, like Vegas, like neon sign, but it's spelled Beetlegoose, like G-E-U-S-E, right?
It's Betelgeuse.
Which I Googled it, and of course it's a star, which is kind of funny. I was like, oh, well, is this just a coincidence that they picked that? Or is this just like a weird, I don't even know, like a weird actual last name? But no, it's the ninth brightest star in the sky, second brightest in the constellation of Orion. It's nearing the end of its life. At least from an article from 2017. I don't think it's supernova yet. But apparently this is the source of the name, Beetlejuice, even though the spelling of it is beetle and then juice, like literally J-U-I-C-E.
They went for the phonetic spelling.
They went for the phonetic spelling to make it easier for audiences.
And just creepier too. Beetlejuice? That's weird, man.
It is weird, but you could pronounce
You wouldn't say it like that, though.
Well, but they do in the movie, obviously, right? There it is on the sign written that way, and they call him Beetlejuice. So
you're a Beetlejuice.
Kind of a weird thing.
Let's go juice some Beetles.
Yeah? You want to get some fresh protein in your diet there?
Put them in the blender or the juicer.
I don't even know what to do with you right now. I don't even know what to say to you. Okay. I did have a few other questions that, I didn't even know. I didn't really know quite what to make of it. Like, comes back around to the original questions I was asking you a minute ago. What is this place where they actually are in this office, like meeting their caseworker? Like, is it like a purgatory, or is this just like the waiting room of hell, but just the afterlife, which is like not what anyone's thought it's going to be, and everyone goes there. Here's a football team. Here's this guy over here. Here's a witch doctor from Central Africa who clearly doesn't have the same beliefs or epistemology as Barbara and Adam who are sitting there.
In the for me, I kind of thought of it as a very literal interpretation of a purgatory situation.
Yeah.
But a very specific purgatory for people such as Adam and Barbara, right? People that have died very suddenly that don't even really, you know what I mean? Like, they need a caseworker. They need someone that's going to kind of show them the way, because when they end up being led through that weird hallway where there's a bunch of stuff and there's that one room of like, what was it called? Like the undead souls or something like that. And he's just like, you don't want to be there. That's like, that's death for the undead or death for the dead or something. I can't remember what he said exactly.
Yeah, I think that's what he
said. They continue on their way, and then they end up in this place that's very much their house, but very much different because it's been totally redecorated. And then they get this very interesting lady coming in and basically, you know, telling them, I don't know, like, this is it. That's essentially what this is. It's like, there's no other spaces for them, evidently. Right. There's no other means. There's no other resources. Like, that makes no sense to me, really. That's a big plot unhinger. You know what I mean?
And that, I know, and that's just what I don't understand, because it's like, if you're tied to the house, what are you? Yeah. Or are you tied to the fact that you need to remove these people from your house too?
Yeah, for some solace or something.
Yeah, like if you accomplish that mission, like, would you have freedom from it? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it the house or is it the goal? Like, the task at hand? Because they didn't die in the house. Like, yeah, that's the weird thing too, right? Like, when you have hauntings, it's like typically someone's murdered in the basement or they were chained up in the basement or whatever. It's usually
they
in the
didn't
basement.
Die at the house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's like kind of curious.
It was just the place they had the most emotional attachment
this
to.
This is another weird reverse Hollywood thing where it's not matching up. It was the same with Poltergeist, where it's we're talking about Poltergeist and hauntings. She makes the comment about Poltergeist being attached to people. Hauntings are attached to place. The house had nothing to do with either of those things. It was built over top of a cemetery. Mm-hmm. Those people didn't die there. They died elsewhere in various different means of death, some violent, some not, whatever, and then moved there. So it's not the place. It was just this amalgamation of all kinds of craziness.
It's not like they were the construction workers that were murdered by the developer that was building the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's definitely one of those things. And it is funny, too, because I think it's just a convenient plot twist, right? Where, not twist, but a plot turner, right? Where it leads them into the direction of Beetlejuice because she offers them nothing. And so what else are they going to do? They're hopeless at this. They can't haunt this place. They're not worth a cent as far as a haunting goes. So it's just a convenient way to get the plot moving, which is kind of, for us, not very satisfying. But when you look at the movie as a whole, though, it's just so quaint and so beautiful. Like, it's not.
It's simple.
We're overanalyzing at this point.
I'm not even analyzing the film. I'm just analyzing the idea. Like, I'm analyzing, just the thought of, like, what ties a spirit or an entity or whatever to certain things. Like what mm-hmm. makes sense of this? Because there's points in this movie with Beetlejuice where I'm like, was this a guy? Is this literally like the elemental, like manifested as Beetlejuice?
No. The caseworker explains that.
Yeah, I know. But it's like, he seems more supernatural than the other ghosts in the movie, right?
He's a little more rotten too.
Yeah.
And why is he in the ground? Why is he haunting? Anyway, why is he that way? It's because he's been outcast. He's been banished to a certain degree.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like a genie ghost. You have to say it three times or rub the jar.
I have a question.
Yes.
What happens after the new family's dead or they move away? Like, what happens to these guys after? Like, they're there forever? Like, that's kind of weird, right? Like, that's not going to stay a thing.
What happens when the house leaves? Burns down.
Well, that's
down.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. What if one day the house is no more?
Right.
Then what? So they've really gone to no effort to solve their problem. They're just coping and living in the moment for then and forever.
Well, what happens to all spirits if all of a sudden just an asteroid hits Earth and we're no more Earth bound?
Boom.
Where are you going? Well, you're already dead.
They're in space.
Space ghosts.
Space ghosts.
Yeah. That's probably a Kryptonaut episode.
Yeah,
sounds
I think
like
so.
It would be one.
It does sound like one.
I don't know. Shout out to those boys. Another weird one too was the handbook for the recently deceased that you mentioned. And I just like thought that was so funny because it's just like this lesser, more playful version of like the Book of the Dead in a way, right? It's not the Book of the Dead for like necromancy or things like that. It's the book for the dead, right? Like not about them, but for them.
Funny play of words.
Yeah. It's like, I just,
And it's so cute because it's like a pastoral scene of like there's like a park bench and a couple holding hands looking into a brightly lit sun kind of thing. And it's like, okay, looks very nice until you actually look at it and read it. And it's like a scientific manual or like an instructions manual essentially, but very technical.
To me, when I first saw the title of it, I was like, okay, they could either only see it or use it or whatever, and it would have made more sense as a ghost for it to be like blank pages for anyone else who picks it up, or if it's just a spectral book, that would make even more sense. But they end up using it in the movie, like the people living.
And causing harm that they don't even really mean to, I guess.
Which makes me feel like it is the Book of the Dead, in a way. It's like you're reading passages from it and controlling the afterlife.
There's incantations to be had.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's just kind of interesting too, because can spirits also read those incantations? Clearly they can. It was a handbook for the dead. So that's a curious thought too. Beetlejuice is really getting my juices flowing. Pun intended.
I hope. I don't know what kind of juice you're talking about over there, but.
Amber. Yeah. Well,
he's got some pretty clammy feet sometimes. So. Could be those. I don't know.
Yeah. Starting to clammery.
Yep.
Yeah, here we go. You are Linda. You just told me that you don't think you could pull off Linda for Halloween. That's literally the same as going, Sirelay Baba Diarrhea. Linda. That's literally what just happened.
Yep.
You just said that to thousands of people. God damn it. Oh, man. Okay. Well, we're kind of coming down to the end here. Obviously, you guys can probably tell that we enjoyed this film.
It's classic.
So definitely suggest watching it if you haven't. I would be slapping you right now if you're in the podcast den.
Yeah. Yeah. And we decided to go with this one. It was kind of last minute, but it's just, like I said already, it's a classic film. And, yeah. And there were some other suggestions we had in, and they're a little bit more modern. And we definitely want to cover them on the show because they fit the themes, but they weren't exactly super Halloween-y or like, we just want to do more of the familiar favorites and just cover some really good home style gems, you know what I mean?
This was a perfect movie to cover because it tied into like either end of this linear timeline we're on. It's a part of the blog release that we just had up on a Straight Up Strange, so you guys should check it out. And also moving into our Poltergeist episode, so it just works out so perfectly.
It's the middle of the book. It's the meat of the book.
Yeah.
The burger, and we're slapping two buns on either side of it, so... Let's just hang tight for that. Can you just tell that me and Andrew are going to be Bob and Linda for Halloween?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get into character here.
You're doing a good job so far. You're really doing a good job. Well, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this Film Friday. And we want to know what you have to say. Mm-hmm. So hit us up wherever you feel like it. You can always send us an email into the portal mailbox at gmail.com. We love your Film Friday suggestions or just episode suggestions or anything you guys have to say about the show. We love getting emails from you. Also on our social media at Into the Portal Podcast on Instagram. Follow us on there as a part of the contest. Also at Strange Podcasts on Twitter, and at Strange Pods on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we're on Twitter and Facebook, into the Portal Podcast. So just hit us up, you guys.
Just do it.
As always, smash that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Subscribe to the show. Tell other people about the show. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us that 5-star rating and review if you feel like typing out some words on there. We really appreciate it.
As always,
we will be back very soon on Into the Portal.
Your gateway to the bizarre.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.